Okay, so today we're going to have Channel 12 did a special report, sort of like 60 Minutes. The English title is Settler Violence in the South Hebron Hills. I added an IDF violence because it's there. And excuse me?
No, I'm sorry. I was talking to a dog.
Okay. And I think we've got this so that we can play it online and we all can watch it while it's going on. If it doesn't work out, there's an alternative. And Yossi will give us an introduction. But before that, let me just go and tell people what's coming up. In 2 weeks, on the third Monday, we have Mark Kleinman, who is a lawyer, and he represents the two Palestinian guys who got in trouble in May after their protest along La Cienega, and they're being charged with a hate crime. He's also done other work for Palestinians. Then in December, on December 20th, the third Monday in December, we have Tania Harry. Is that how you pronounce it, Yossi?
Tania Harry.
Tanya Harry, who's the executive director of Geisha, and we don't yet have a good title, but provisionally it'll be Life in Gaza and Breaking the Siege. The provisional thing we have in January on Monday the 16th, that is an error. That should be Sunday the 16th. Is Echo Peace and the Green New Deal. Echo Peace is a joint operation between Israel, Palestine, and Jordan. And the Green New Deal deals with using water as a tool to make peace among the three countries. It should be pretty interesting if we can get them. The Green New Deal people, they have a whole bunch of people. The Echo Peace people are in Glasgow right now promoting their thing. And then on February, on the third Monday in February, the 21st, we have Tony Sadie, and he's going to do two things. He's going to talk about the Alex Oda case, and he's going to talk about the Arab-Jewish solution, which will really be remembering the 1980s coalition that a few people on our group were in that 1980s coalition. So with that, I am going to go back to this, and I'm going to end this sharing, and I'm going to turn the floor over to Yossi, who will introduce this Channel 12 special.
Okay. What Jeff referring is a Channel 12 in Israel, a TV, which is the number one watch TV channel in Israel. And they have a regular Friday evening program, which is kind of a magazine, similar to 60 Minutes, but they have more segments. It's more than an hour. And then they have panel discussions of people who work there, all the way from the extreme right to, I can say, center. There is no anti-occupation person on this panel, if I can say. Lately, they added an Arab journalist to the panel that he's like a token Arab, and he tried to do his best. Sometime he get attacked. But anyway, this is the channel. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, they put a 15-minute segment, which is basically showing a snapshot how the occupation actually works, how the occupations vis-a-vis the settlers and the army, and they go a little bit history, and this is very, very unusual segment, because overall the Israeli TV hardly does not give almost nothing about what's happening in the occupations from the point of view of the abuse. What sometimes they'll tell you about some Palestinians who attack a settler and they knife them and they did this, but and the Israeli army are made a raid, you know, and they caught some suspected terrorists, and this is the language they use. And suddenly came this segment out of nowhere. It's difficult for me to explain why, in such a prominent time, they give 15 minutes and large number of Israelis, Jews watching it. I don't know if it was any effect, because it's just like one time shot and then you don't hear anything. I saw it two times, and Breaking the Silence, the organization, took the segment and added an English subtitle to it, and they start distributing it around the world so people can watch it. From a journalistic point of view, they did a decent job of presenting like 101 occupation in this specific area called South Hebron, which is in the south part of the West Bank, where some poor families, Palestinian family, live. Some of them live in caves, and they get daily harassment by the settlers. Anyway, I think, Jeff, now you can watch it, and we can have discussion after this. If some people want to get clarifications about this or this, but you'll see some, for 1 minute, a representative of Breaking the Silence saying something, and another activist, a woman, young woman activist from Haifa, who came there to show her solidarity to Palestinians. Okay, anyway, Jeff, now.
Okay, okay, what is the Hebrew title?
You know, I already forgot.
Okay, so we tested this, and I think it'll play. If it doesn't, we'll come, let me know by just speaking up. So here we go.
You have to share the screen first, no?
Excuse me?
You have to share the screen, no?
Yeah, it's coming.
There you go.
יוצאים הילדים האלה מהכפר הזעיר שלהם, טובל, אל בית הספר שנמצא בכפר גדול יותר ששמו טובל. הליכה של 2 קילומטר. באמצע הדרך הם נעצרים. מולם נמצאת חוות מעון, מאחז בלתי חוקי, אבל מתרחב בהתמדה כבר 20 שנה. הדרך לבית הספר עוברת בשולי המאחז. הילדים ממתינים לטנדר צבאי שאמור לאבטח אותם.
قديش برافقنا عشان المستوطنين بقوا يعتدوا علينا وكتمجيش يجيش ومرات بقوا يعتدوا علينا وديش معنا وديش ما يسووش يلا نرجع الدواء
בוקר טנדר הליווי הגיע בול בזמן. הילדים מזהים אותו מרחוק ויכולים להמשיך עכשיו בדרכם אל בית הספר. ההגנה הצהלית לילדים הפלסטינים מפני המתנחלים מתקיימת מדי יום כבר 17 שנה. ברוכים הבאים לארץ האבסורד, הקצה התחתון של יהודה ושומרון, דרום הר חברון.
אתה בטק?
כן, מה? מה עובד? שוב, מסתכל?
מי מסתכל בו?
אנו לידי ומרש. אמן. عجبتني ها كان ابوي وعمي وعمي مسكت المغرات من زمان قبل اسرائيل حتى تكون موجود قبل اسرائيل ساكنين هنا نفس السنه معنا انا بالمحل الاكل انا حتى بحط اكل جزء من اكل غير معنا عندنا
ايش في شيء يقول مثلا
بس الحين مش كنا بننام ننام في الليل برا بس في النهار في الحر في الشمس لأنه ما في الشارع مسجنات ويكد ندخل في المغارة في النهار في النهار في النهار بكون بارد المغارة
نحن بجيبة كفاروا في عني بأزور زي لكل مشبخة יש בית יש מערה לחלק מבני הבית ויש מערה לצום
هاي حياتنا والغنم أحسن في الصيف وفي الشتاء تظل لنا كويس وضع خوف السقعة وخوف الشمس عشان هيك وبعدين صحتي الأحسن تظل كويس وضع
هنا أتوا كفار جنبا كفار خدشان
אני מרגישה העיניים שלי נפתחות, והאוזניים שלי נפתחות לדברים שפשוט לא היו קיימים מבחינתי לפני זה, מתחילים להיות לא רק קיימים, אלא גם לבעור בי ולגרום לי להרגיש שקורה כאן משהו שהוא לא בסדר, שהוא לא תקין, ושאני לא יכולה יותר להתעלם ממנו. יש כאן איזשהו ניסיון למחוק אנשים שחיים כאן, וזה דבר שחייב לצאת החוצה. אנשים חייבים לדעת מה קורה בשטחים ובשטחי C.
لا كونغو ولا متور ولا كهرباء كل ابوي بحشنا على الزيت من احنا من انه يعني بيجي 10 ايام احنا فضناه على الكونغو
من يوم هذا من البيت تبعي
هي احنا ساكن بالخيمه هذه ساكن هنا
ביתו של רסמי אבו ערן נהרס לפני 7 חודשים, יחד עם הבית של בנו, רון, שנולד במערה שראיתם קודם. אנחנו על גבול שטח האש 918, אבל שלא תתבלבלו. בכל מקרה, הפלסטינים בשטחי C לא יכולים לבנות באופן חוקי. 97% מהבקשות להיתרי בנייה אינן מאושרות.
יום משוגע שאני חתכת לה חמם זהה, יג'ו. יא יחמלו, יא יג'ו בתרחל.
בינואר האחרון הגיע אל השכן שמעבר לוואדי רב סרן של המנהל האזרחי מלווה בג'יפ מ"פ. הם הודיעו לשכן שהם מחרימים כמה כלי עבודה וגנרטור בגלל שהתחיל בבנייה. החרמות כאלה הם עניין שגרתי בשטחים, אבל הפעם הייתה התנגדות. הרון אבו ערם, שביתו נהרס חודש וחצי קודם, החליט להיאבק על הגנרטור של השכן. העירייה ששמעתם נרתה על ידי המ"פי. בצהל טוענים שהחיילים היו בסכנת חיים, שהמ"פי נחנק מאחור על ידי אחד הפלסטינים, החליט לירות באוויר, אולם הנשק הוסט על ידי פלסטיני אחר. יכול להיות, התקרית עדיין בחקירת מצ"ח. מה שברור זה שהרון נורה בצווארו. הוא משותק לגמרי ומאושפז בבית חולים בחברון.
מי עושה את זה? מי בא להרוס בית בג'ינבה? מי רב עם ארון אבו ערם על גנרטור ובסוף השבר יורד? חיילים, חיילים שאנחנו שולחים לפה. ביטחון המדינה זה ללוות ילדים פלסטינים כדי לשמור עליהם ממתנחלים, במקום ללכת ולעצור את המתנחלים כבר 17 שנה. זה ביטחון המדינה. אנחנו היינו פה, אנחנו יודעים בדיוק מה זה ביטחון המדינה, זה לא ביטחון המדינה. והמציאות שאנחנו רואים בדרום הר חברון של הריסת באר מים, הריסת דיר צאן, החרמת תא שירותים, זה לא ביטחון המדינה.
למה אתה חושב שהרון היה מוכן להילחם בחיילים בשביל גנרטור?
מי שהיה שם נטור. אינטי בשוף סוד המטור. הרון, מי שהיה שם נטור. איך נעשור לנקע שער?
זה הסיפור כאן בדרום הר חברון ובכלל בשטחי C, המלחמה האדמה. האמצעי הנפוץ בצד היהודי הוא חוות חקלאיות. 30 חוות כאלה הוקמו ביהודה ושומרון רק ב5 השנים האחרונות. כולן בלתי חוקיות, אבל לא רק שהמנהל האזרחי לא מעז להרוס אותן, הן מקבלות סיוע מהמועצות האזוריות שפורצות עבורן דרכים ומספקות להן תשתיות. זאת למשל החווה החדשה של יששכר מן בדרום הר חברון. אני לא בשטח הפרטי.
לפי החוק בישראל, זה טאפה פה.
כן. זה ממש לא השטח הפרטי שלך.
אתה רוצה שאני אזמין משטרה?
אז תזמין משטרה. אני עומד מחוץ לשטח שלך, שוודאי גם לא קנית אותו.
מה שלי?
כן?
זה מקום חוקי כמו...
אתה קנית את השטח הזה?
אדוני, אתה יכול להביא את
המצלמה
בבקשה?
את יששכר מן אפשר לראות בסרטון מהזמן שהתגורר בחוות נאור. שוצף על הילדים הפלסטינים שבאותו יום לא... הכללי, והוא היה צבאי.
תעצור אותם, מה אתה נותן להם מסתובב פה? הם התחילו לעבור פה לבד, תעצור אותם. תעצור אותם, קודם תעצור אותם.
מן הרגע שחווה כמו שמשכר מן מוקמת, נמנעת הגישה של הפלסטינים משטחי מרעה ולחלקות שנהגו לאבד באזור שסביב החווה. זה מייצר חיכוכים אלימים על בסיס שבועי. הנה הפלסטינים מיידים אבנים בשבת האחרונה. הנה המתנחלים מיידים מן הצד השני, והחיילים באמצע. לפני חודשיים, למשל, יצאו מתנחלים רעולי פנים מכיוון חווה חקלאית הסמוכה למאחז מצפה יאיר, ותקפו בעלות ובאבנים משפחה פלסטינית שמגיעה מדי שבת אל אדמתה. הם שברו את הפנים של אב המשפחה שפונה לבית חולים ונזקק לניתוח. במאחזים סירבו להתראיין בכתבה זו. מועצת הר חברון סירבה אפילו למסור תגובה לאולפן שישי.
ضربوا بالصوتين عليهم حجار وكان في ناس جنب السيارة وضربوا على المصورين كمان حجار وكان داخل السيارة كمان في ناس وضربوا عليهم حجار
انت تخافت لاستضافة بنور
هذا؟ الناسين شخين كان بأزور زي الناسين أخي شلبين و עם הומור ואהבה לחיים שפגשתי בחיים שלי. אני מתה מפחד מהיהודים כאן. אני מתה מפחד מהמתנחלים. אני הכי מפחדת להגיע ללוות רואים ליד מצפה יאיר או ליד חוות יעקב דליה.
לך, מה היינו עושים אתכם, יבני סדות, אם היינו יחלים? הייתם מתים, יבני סדות, יש לשרלוטות.
פחד מוות, וגם הדבר שהכי מפחיד זה שהמשטרה והצבא איתם. כבר בכמה אירועים הייתי שהיה אלימות כלפיי, כלפי אנשים שאני נמצאת איתם, והצבא והמשטרה עושים את זה כלום.
חמשת הילדים הגיעו לבית הספר בשלום באדיבות צהל. בצהריים יחזור הסיור הצבאי וילווה אותם בכיוון ההפוך הביתה. אין חדש תחת השמש בדרום הר חברון, ארץ המערות הבלתי אפשרית שנשכחה מלב.
בעצם למה אתה גר כאן? למה אתה לא עובר ליאטה?
هذه ارضي وكيف اروح انا اعتبرها وانا هذه ارضي وارض جدادي انا ما بطلع من هنا يعني كان يعني اقول لك كان على يعني مش هذا داري ما بطلعش مستخ ابني ما بطلعش الا على جثت ما بطلع من ارضي
וזה מה שאומרים בצהל, חיילי צהל וכוחות הביטחון פועלים כל עד על מנת לשמור על החוק והסדר ביהודה ושומרון, למנוע הפרות חוק מצד הפלסטינים ומצד הישראלים. לגבי האירוע שבו נורה ונפצה פלסטיני, נפתחה חקירת מצ"ח, הממצאים הועברו לפרקליטות. שטח 918 משמש לאימוני צהל שנים ארוכות. הפלסטינים ששוהים בשטח מבצעים בנייה לא חוקית, דבר שפוגע משמעותית ביכולת לקיים אימונים צבאיים חיוניים.
הייתי עם חיילי גדוד 890 של הצנחנים שמוצבים בחברון, ציפו לפגוש את האורח הלא שגרתי.
Is there, is something need to be clarified after watching it because the quality via Zoom was so-so. In the end, was the IDF spokesperson said that because it's a military zone, the Palestinians violating the law by building illegal, without explaining that those Palestinians who live in South Hebron, they live there before even the Israeli occupied, before even Israel was established. So in 1999, they declare some part of the area is a military training place called 918, And then they told the people who live there, you live here illegally because you are interfering with the army training. This is a, but it's not only there, other location in Jordan Valley, they're doing exactly the same thing. They're declaring some area as a military training. And then they tell the Palestinians, some of them are Bedouins, that they are there without a permit, or they are terror-passing, completely ignoring the history of the people who live there. Anyway.
Let's, should we do a round robin and have people talk about what they think and they feel? Is that what we might want to do? Uri, you're the first person on my screen, so why don't you just start? You've got to unmute yourself. No, Uri, you must unmute yourself.
Finally, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, what you need is this going on for the last 30, 40 years at least. Breakthrough is really that all of a sudden, Channel 12, which is really a government channel, Friday night tells the Israelis who don't want to know anything about it, guys, we are not the nicest guys in the area, not necessarily. And I think that's really the breakthrough. Other than that, this has been known for I don't know how long. You see, I always told my friends, you need to know the Zionist dogma. The Zionist dogma went like that, from people without land to land without people. The Zionist dogma still runs the show in the West Bank with regards to the Israelis. They get the preferential treatment because Israel wants to get rid of the Palestinians. Basically, they want the land empty. They're doing whatever they can. So this is on a low level. So for the Americans, use the analogy of the Jim Crow, the beginning of the 20th century. And instead of the Israeli army, it's the Southern sheriffs. We'll give you some sense of like what's happening there. Essentially, they're trying to get them out any way they can, including depriving them of water. And this is an arid area. So Israel is basically pretending to be a human country, but at the back, kind of like at the back lot, they're dealing with the Palestinians like we dealt with the Indians. Kind of like, let's get rid of them. They're not supposed to be here. I mean, it hurts me to tell you that. You know, I served in the Israeli army. And this is not the army I served in. But the problem is that the Israeli army basically takes commands from the politicals, and the political basically say, we do not want the Palestinians to make their life miserable. Every once in a while, the Israeli Supreme Court, because some of them people still believe in some values, they say, you can do that, you can do that, you can do that. But essentially, it's a military control of the area, and the Palestinians are subject to a military control with all the harshness of the treatment. And unfortunately, they are so brazen that even with the Israelis who come to support the Palestinians, the Israeli army either beats them up or let the settlers beat them up. It got to that point. So no apologies. Israel has been doing it forever. The world is starting to see that more and more. And I think that's what really kind of scares them or moves them or impacts them, the politicals in Israel, because they say, wait a second, we don't look good. Even though we pretend to be the nice people, we tell the other people, you know, but you don't live in this neighborhood. They're all savages. We can do anything we want to do then. Remember what we said about the Indians? Same thing. So basically, I can't watch these kind of programs anymore because it gets to me. I mean, I was involved in the 80s with the organization that Foundation for Middle East Communication, we talked and we tried to do, even in the 80s, it was like that, but it was not as bad. Israel became more brazen and more brazen, and they put more militant people. They get all the crazies, the militant crazies, and they let them stay there. It's against government agreements, government regulation, against the courts, everything. And they do against, and they pretend they don't know, they don't see the anything. In other words, they use the power of the state to obfuscate the whole thing and pretend that the Palestinians are the bad guys, we are the nice guys, and they come beat us, throw stones at us, they fight us and all that. You saw the column of tanks coming to people who live in caves. What's the purpose of that thing, if not to intimidate and cause damage? And luckily to some of these people, the money that they get for the solar panels and all that comes from the European Union. And the European Union, when they see how the Israeli army stands by and lets the Israelis and others destroy that thing, told the Israelis it's gonna cost you a lot politically in Europe. So that's kind of hold them a little bit back. But other than that, all bets are off. And eventually it's gonna be a bloodshed. That's and it's gonna be on the hand of the Israelis because they are the power who has got the guns. Anyhow, get me off the soapbox. I said my piece. Thank you.
Well, my picture's next, so I'll go next. And I'll just say at this point that it's as bad as it was shown on this video, it's gotten worse. Because there was an out and out program in the South Hebron Hills a few weeks ago where tens of settlers came down with bare shirts and, you know, without shirts, but full masks and attacked a village. And 2 days before that, there were a bunch of Jewish, in fact, peace workers who were bringing water to one of the caves and they were attacked by the army. And the commander of that unit of the army actually did what were clearly war crimes. He put his knee on the neck of a guy, just like the George Floyd thing. Anyway, let me pass it on to the other people. So Jack, you're next, and you've got to unmute yourself.
Right, so I wanted to say first that for us Jews, we should know better than anybody what it means for to be attacked and for police to stand by and do nothing. We went through this in Europe. We were the victims of pogroms. And here we see the same thing going on, and we're the perpetrators of this. The next thing that struck me is the army escorting the children to school, which in my mind is some kind of tacit acknowledgement that these Palestinians have a right to be there and have a right to some kind of normal life. It's a paradoxical situation. So
Supreme Court decision.
Pardon?
It was a Supreme Court decision that forced them to do that.
Okay. But all the same, it highlights the paradox, the schizophrenia of the whole situation. And the third thing I want to bring to your attention, I listen to Haaretz podcasts every week. And this past week, there was an interesting report on offshore bank accounts that are financing the purchase of Jewish land in the occupied territories. And these are offshore accounts that nobody knows where the money's coming from and who owns them. So these illegal Jewish settlements, these illegal Jewish farms, one question is, who is behind it? Who is financing it? It's not just the regional councils and the government. There's something else going on here.
There was famous one on Erwin Moscovich. Erwin Moscovich was for the last 20 or 30 years before he died. He got all the money from Hawaiian Gardens Casino, and he was actually buying, doing everything in Jerusalem. Like Erwin Moscovich, there's a few other dozen good American Jews who have money to spend. So that's your answer. Not only Americans, British.
Well, that's what I suspected.
Yossi, you're next.
Piece of information. Whatever the money comes from, there are different private organizations, all kind of stuff that Trump will be proud of those people how they're managing to pass money. However, as soon as they establish those area, and you heard in the report, the government gives them a full support when it comes to the infrastructure. Without supporting the infrastructures, those community cannot survive. They need electricity, they need sewage system, they need water, and almost with no exceptions, they receive this. And sometimes the infrastructures start built by other settlers or by other settlements, and then the government joined later. When coming all kinds of excuses, you know, people need help, people need a decent life, on and on and on. And this is the story of the last 54 years, or let's say, of all the settlements that have been created, the large one, the small one, and what they call the outpost. They get all the government infrastructures works to give them everything, and this how they can stay there forever. One more, another piece of information. The area that we saw, it's under Area C, which is 60% of the West Bank, where the Israeli government have a military and civilian 100% control what's going on there. And if a Palestinian, they mentioned this in the report, I just want to remind, want to build a house, 97% of their request is denied. But they need a house, they need something, so they build, and the army come and they demolish it because they're saying you did it illegally. You know, under international law, the whole thing is under occupations, and the occupation law, even the occupation have some rules by international law, where the occupying power have the obligations to maintain a decent life of the people who live under occupations. When it comes to the infrastructures, water, and all this stuff, and this was consistently denied, especially in Area C, that it's around 200,000 Palestinians live there in Area C, you know. Okay.
The next person online is Jeff Cooper, but Tony has his hand up, so let's go to Tony.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. Edward Said was right when in 1994 he broke down Area A, B, and C and said that it was just a sham to put the Zionists in charge of taking over more territory. And the second thing is that they have no responsibility under as an occupier because, of course, it's not occupied territory. It's disputed territory, according to the official evaluation of the situation, right?
As evaluated by Israel, not as evaluated by the...
Well, yeah, but what international body has, other than international body with any kind of power, has called Israel out on that? No one.
No, they have a report by different human rights organizations, including UN, human rights institutions.
But until the EU and the United States say, no dice, you're full of crap, that's not the case, nothing's going to happen.
By the way, in Israel, they don't call it dispute territories anymore.
What do they call it?
Meaning
ours?
Now they just make call the whole area Judea and Samaria. This is how they define this. When you watch the news in Israel,
yeah,
some of the printing press, they refer this as Judea and Samaria. You know, like they're saying, you have the Negev, you have the Galilee, and then you have Judea and Samaria. It's like they tell the new generation in Israel, this is Judea and Samaria. And there are some Arabs who live there by mistake, or who know why they even live there. And they're doing a lot of problems for our life. We have a peaceful life, and those that live in Judea and Samaria giving us hard time. More or less, this is how the narrative goes on the evening news.
Including the weather. The weather forecast always.
Yeah, just... the weather forecast is Judea and Samaria. So
and if you're lucky enough to get a tourist map when you're in Israel and you don't know a thing about it, you'll see absolutely no distinctions whatsoever.
And the map in schools. I was in a junior high 2 years ago, 3 years ago, as part of being a meeting with Abraham Board meetings. And we went to a junior high in the north part of Israel. And right away in the class, I saw the map from Jordan River to the Mediterranean, one piece of land. This is 14, 15, 16 years old boys and girls. And this is what they see. If you ask them about Green Line, they'll ask you, what is the Green Line? What is 67 border?
No, they don't know.
They have no clue, you know.
Down the memory hole.
Okay, let's go on with the round robin. Jeff Cooper, you're next.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. All I can say is, from my direct experience, seeing the kind of violence that I saw on a daily basis, especially in the Ramallah where I lived, you can't describe it. I mean, there were a few times where I had to break down. I broke down and told certain Palestinians that I was very close to that I was Jewish, and it pained me to see what I was seeing, especially from the younger soldiers. I mean, I'm assuming they were 17, 18, or 19 years old, but it's just painful. I mean, you can see it on a video and it has one kind of meaning, but you actually, when you actually see and I saw mostly soldiers beating up children right in front of me, and everybody on the streets freeze. Everybody freezes. And the only time I saw the settlers doing things is when they went around throwing rocks through people's homes, windows, slashing tires, breaking cars. It would be painful as a human being, but it was especially painful based on the history of my family, all of my grandparents were immigrants from Eastern Europe, and we lost everybody in the Holocaust who was still there. So it was extremely painful. I just want to say that the issue of I'm going back to the early 1990s, the issue of permits. My experience, my direct experience with people was that they didn't deny you your permit. You know what they would do? They just wouldn't answer.
Nothing.
And so you wait and you wait and you wait. And they say, well, we haven't reached a verdict, you know, a decision yet. And so then if you build onto your house, or by the way, and I wrote this to the LA Times one time when they had some article, and I'm going to say it, they're assholes because they didn't publish my letter, which was a lot better than the letters they published. It wasn't only homes. If you have a school, they did this to schools and other buildings. And being as I was working with teachers, there was a number of schools that had the necessity of adding on to a classroom or two. And when they and they put in, they followed all the procedures and they asked for a permit. They didn't get the permit. And eventually they would build a room, an extra room onto an existing building. And then what the military did would come in and they would destroy the whole wing, not just the classroom that was built. So, I mean, I just pointed out that it's beyond homes. The tactic, at least then, at least in the Ramallah, was you just don't answer. You don't answer. And you wait for some, it's almost like you're baiting them. You know, we're not going to answer. So we're going to hope that what you'll do is you'll build. So then we have a justification for not destroying just what you built, but destroying the whole house. So you can add a room onto a house and they'll knock out the whole house. And that was my direct experience. Thank you.
Asim?
I really can't comment. I was watching it and it was really difficult to watch the video, frankly. It hurts, my heart hurts. So, but basically when I was a child, we watched cowboy movies and we didn't understand what was going on. The Europeans had taught us that these Red Indians were killing them and killing their women and killing their children. And you know, we took it as true. It's only now that we've grown up, we realize the truth. And I think the same thing as you have pointed out, all of you, that the many people in Israel really do not comprehend what is going on, what the settlers are doing to the Palestinians.
Dick, Ruth is next on my thing.
Okay, fine. Whatever, no problem.
Ruth? Unmute, Ruth. No, you gotta unmute. Let's, Ruth, you want to unmute and say something, or should we pass it on to Dick? I think she said go to Dick. So Dick, why don't you?
Okay, I'm not sure how many people saw it, but there was a very interesting article in the editorial pages of the LA Times today by Nicholas Goldberg. I've met Nicholas Goldberg a few times and once was at the Levantine Center. So I've met his wife before, Amy Willits, who is close to the Nation magazine and she teaches at UC Irvine. So it was a weak overall week, but he made a strong point. He said that Israel is very concerned about its image, which is why many historical files, and he focused a lot on Deir Yassin, the massacre in 1948, many similar massacres. And he said the reason that these files are not released from secret military and government archives in Israel ultimately comes down to a question of image. And I think that's a valid point, but of course, there's a lot of things that he didn't say, which is the reality is an apartheid state. It isn't just that events happened in 1948 or 1956, but it's continued up to the present. And I think what this video showed is the real government of Israel. This is the policy of the government of Israel. And there's people whose job is to manage the presentation, manage the image, and they probably wanted something like this. I mean, maybe I'm being cynical. I mean, they might have been truly motivated to do an expose. Some people are simply think that an occasional story like this is a way to cleanse the Israeli government. Others might think this is the only way we can get even a mild criticism of the Israeli government there. And this is only dealing with Hebron, it's not dealing with the rest of the West Bank, and it doesn't deal with Gaza, it doesn't deal with East Jerusalem. But those are the realities. And I have to think of the U.S. as a partner. And I think, who was it? Tony mentioned this. I think it was Tony who mentioned it, maybe others. What Nicholas Goldberg wrote about, what reporters who are who represent, you know, prominent newspapers like the LA Times, they have to basically self-censor and self-censor themselves. And when you look at Congress, the most that they'll ever do is say new settlements aren't helpful. I think there's finally a little bit of pushback among the most progressive Democrats in Congress, maybe 20 or 30 in the Progressive Caucus. I know that they've been very critical of the latest ruling that, I think, what is it, six Palestinian organizations that are human rights organizations are considered to be terrorist organizations. So these groups will be shut down and the members of the group can be theoretically arrested at any time. And the most that this has gotten is a rebuke. You know, there's no effort to throttle the amount of money that goes into Israel. There's no efforts to use the power of the United States at the Security Council to impose global sanctions or individual U.S. sanctions like there are on Venezuela and Cuba. No effort to have military intervention, which you could probably say is justified by the efforts of the United States in Afghanistan and Iraq or Somalia. There's a long list of negative and positive things that the U.S. could do, but none of this. So they're, you know, they're fully complicit. And what they're complicit in is basically the construction of an apartheid state. And this is just like the tip of the spear, but there's a giant spear behind efforts like this. So I think, for a group like LA Jews for Peace, we ultimately need to point a finger not just at the settlers, not just at the role of the army in allowing it, but at the role of our own government, including the Biden administration, in giving a green light to all of this with money and diplomatic support. That's my comments.
Let me just, before we go to Tony, let me just say that when we wrote that statement about the six human rights groups that were designated terrorists, we addressed that to the Biden administration, as pressure on the Biden administration. We didn't address it to Israel. We didn't say, Israel, you did wrong.
That's the way to go.
That's the way we did it. And let me just say one other thing about those things. The thing that links these six organizations is that they all gave testimony to the International Criminal Court. And the speculation is that the reason Israel wants to really shut these down, besides image, as you said, Dick, is that they want to sort of stop these groups from giving data and testifying at the ICC. Anyway, let's go to you, Tony.
Yeah, and you can add Combatants for Peace, which I understand is under this same kind of terrorist designation now. I haven't seen anything on that. The piece that Nicholas Goldberg did,
yeah.
If you look at the 972 podcast on the 972 site, back in June, the end of June, they interviewed the two guys who founded Akhavot. And they give many more details about the small percentage. I think the total percentage is something like 0.005 or 0.006 of the total documents in the archives have been able to be released to the Israeli public. And the guys who do Akhavot are trying to talk not so much to the international community as they are to fellow Israelis. So it's worth it. The interview is only about 40 minutes long, but it's on the 972 podcast. A few images. Noor Zahor, the Israeli activist, the woman who was doing the translation. She said it's an attempt to erase the people who live there. And that the interesting thing is that when you finish that YouTube thing and you pull it up on YouTube itself, it's her image that pops up and it says left-wing Israeli activist. So there's a kind of a slight insult that is given to the woman if she's the only thing. I mean, they leave out the total destruction. Just think of the image in that dry land of the machine coming down on the water tank and the water just splashing all over. Where does that go? So there's a lot of images in that. It's a really disturbing piece. I suggest that what we do is draft a letter to all of the congressmen or congresspeople who represent us and give a link to that piece and say, please watch this, have your staff watch it, and come back with an intelligent response to what's going on. And I think the person we should really direct it at is Karen Bass, because if she's going to run for mayor, she is no longer in Congress, but now she's got a whole city of Zionist supporters that she's going to have to worry about. It'd be very interesting to see what she would say when confronted with that question.
Good idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, I support that also. Do you want to draft a letter, Tony?
Yeah, I will. Did we hear from Judy?
No, she's next.
Okay.
Hello. Yeah, I saw this before tonight and I just was horrified as usual because it's just so awful. And those poor kids. Oh, that's so. I have two questions, little questions. So after the settlers came, that noise thing that they started, I wonder if they stopped that noise testing, that horrible boom in the middle of the night. That's just a little question. I mean, now that the settlers are there, you think they'd be complaining about that too? Remember the part where they say that Israel designated that a special army testing place for noise? And the guy set up those and they boomed their noise things in the middle of the night.
So you're asking, are these illegal settlements on this military firing zone 918? Is that what you're asking? Yossi, do you know that?
In 95% of the settlements or outposts eventually get approved by the government. Here and there, sometime.
But I'm just wondering, before the settlements, they started doing the noise thing to torture the Palestinians. And then the settlers come, are still doing the noise? I mean, it's just nothing question.
What you see there is the army, it's not the settlers. The army, because they declared the area in 1999 as a...
I know, but don't the settlers complain about the noise to the army then and get the noise stopped?
No, because the training done where the Palestinians live. The settlers are not nearby, maybe a few kilometers.
Oh.
You see? So when the army decide to make the military training is purely where the Palestinians live, not where the settlers live. They will never do it.
I can't picture it. I picture the settlers being like
a couple
blocks away or something. I mean,
the tanks went through the Palestinian community. They will never do it. They will never pass the tanks in the middle of the settlements. It's not happening. The army will always coordinate with the settlers what can they do and what they cannot do.
Oh.
The settlers have direct representations in the Israeli cabinets, in the parliament, in the media. You know, Channel 12 have one journalist there, his name Haggai Amit. His father was a terrorist in 1980, was a few years in jail. And he represent the view of the settlers as a commentator. And he's very influential in Channel 12. So they have, the army will never harass the same way the settlers. It's not happening, you know.
My other question is, why is there only 5 kids? Is that everybody, all the kids in the settlement? I mean, all the kids in the
in that one particular little town, yeah.
For this small community, they are the kids. Maybe other kids go to a different school. We don't know, you know. But the story is the same, that if the army does not give them protection, they cannot go to school because the settlers will stop them and start throwing stones on them, and they will run back home.
Yeah.
So this is how. Sometimes you have an Israeli activist where the army does not give a, and they sometimes manage to escort the kids to school.
Yeah.
They're not always able to do it.
At least that one guy was embarrassed and wanted the cameras turned off. I mean, that was, but.
Yeah, the farmer who got enough water on top of his hillside for his long farm greenhouse.
And then he comes down to yell at the kids. I mean, the people, I mean, it's.
Yeah, but notice that the kids are walking. You would think that if they were going to get escorted, the guy would open up the Jeep and let them sit in the back there and drive them off to school. But no, he just follows them along. So if they do get hit by the stones, then what does he do? He's there to take them to the hospital?
Yeah, why don't they just drive them to the school if they're going to go there? There's only 5 of them.
Good question.
Oh, I didn't think of that one. Okay, Israel gets away with so much, they can do anything. I mean, it might as well just get that guy that wrote us all a message and said, you guys don't do anything at your meetings, so I don't want to come anymore. I don't know his name. I don't know what he wants us to do. I mean, nobody can do anything against Israel.
Yeah, it's a crying shame.
I'm done.
Well, look how so difficult to have a meaningful discussion in the US Congress about, let's say, this issue of human rights in the occupied territory. It's almost impossible. Even you have a new progressive Democrats, more progressive than before, and I think they're having a hard time, let's say, to have a meaningful discussion because it's required to somebody put on the agenda. I don't know all the procedure and have some meaningful discussion what in the world's going on there to bring witnesses, not just Palestinian witnesses, even Israeli human rights activists as the witnesses. But it never happened in the US Congress history that was a discussion with witnesses about what's happening. You know. It did happen in the European Parliament. By the way, I watched a Zoom meeting with representative of the 6 Palestinian human rights organizations. And they gave one of the reasons why Israel did what they did. They said more than a year ago, the Israeli government, this was still under Netanyahu, they sent so-called document that's supposed to prove that this organization engaged in terrorism. And they asked the European Union to stop give them money. The reaction from the European Union said, okay, we'll take the document, we'll bust together and we'll let you know. So it was investigated by they didn't mention what countries, but they investigate this document, and they said in reaction to the Israeli government that this is all fraudulent. This is all baseless accusations, and therefore will continue to support those organizations, because whatever you gather after we found out, it's all fabricated stories that have nothing to do with reality. Israeli government got angry and they said, okay, it didn't work one way. So now they are officially, these designate them as a terrorist organizations. And now they'll tell the European Union, look, you're donating money to terrorists. How can you do this? With the hope that it will put pressure on the European Union not to give money to terrorist organizations. So far, we didn't hear any. I mean, the reaction from the European Union was that this is not very nice. We're criticizing this. But so far, they did not. The European Union did not say, okay, we got it. This is terrorist. We're not going to help them. Maybe there is internal debate. This is what the Israeli government hoped, that the European Union will take this Israeli government declaration and will stop, give them money, because a lot of money comes. This is part of the European Union foreign policy, to give money around the world to human rights organizations, not just to this one. And one of them said that it's happened in Hong Kong, that the Chinese government declared Amnesty International in Hong Kong as a terrorist organization, with the hope that they will be expelled from Hong Kong. But so far we didn't hear. I think the European Union understand that this is another fabricated action by the Israeli government. But you know, you never know how they're going to react.
What has been the State Department's reaction?
I think they said you didn't tell us in ahead of time. You caught us by surprise.
We're looking into it.
Something like this, something very vague. Was not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should add Antony Blinken to the list of people to send this to.
Well, okay, is there more discussion on this or any other related topic? Does anyone want to, do we want to switch to maybe talk about Glasgow?
You said talk about what?
Glasgow.
Oh, Glasgow. Glasgow.
Scotland.
Glasgow, Scotland.
Scotland.
It's just a replay of what we've been talking about, that's all.
I found an article on NPR about the State Department and these six Palestinian groups labeled terrorists, and what they say has nothing to do with their behavior. They're saying we respect all human rights, but of course that's pure baloney. I'll post the link right over here.
Okay. Just a question, who are the Congress people that would be represented by the group here? I mean, I know-
I'm represented by Ted Lieu.
Ted Lieu?
I'm represented by Jimmy Gomez.
Jimmy Gomez?
I for me, it's a tough guy, Brad Sherman.
Brad Sherman, okay.
Well, Schiff. Adam Schiff.
Okay.
Schiff will be on Amanpour tonight.
Anybody?
Karen Bass.
You're Karen Bass, sorry? Okay. So am
I. I'm Karen Bass also.
Okay. Asim? Need to unmute.
Asim. He's probably Lowenthal, aren't you?
Haseem, just hit the space bar and you'll unmute yourself briefly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. All I know is the local one here is Katie Porter.
Katie Porter. Okay.
Oh, she's nice.
She's a great one. I send her money. She gets all the people with money. She gets them and they're afraid of her. She grilled Jamie Dimon a year ago. I never seen him being grilled like by anybody. He thinks he's God.
She put him in his place. She's a tough one.
She's great. As far as I'm concerned.
We need more Katie Porters, that's for sure.
Add more of her.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I wonder what she would probably actually answer a message. That would be interesting.
Tony, is your idea that we should we'll send a letter to these people? Each of us will, as a constituent, we'll send it, and we'll see what kind of a form letter we get back.
Yeah, we could draft it in that way, but I think maybe just sending a letter to each one of them from LA Jews for Peace saying that we have members who live in your district.
That's good.
Okay.
Maybe you should actually list our names when you say that. What do you think? I mean, or you want to just make it like a group. I mean, that maybe represents more people that way, but in a way it's more personal if you list all of our names, like we've actually signed it. I don't know.
Well, we can do that in the CC.
Yeah, and every name can say what district they are, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you include Ted Lieu?
Ted Lieu is my I
do have Ted Lieu.
My guy.
He's Dick Plotkin.
You don't think that would minimize? I mean, if you had 100 names, I would say okay, put them all in there. But if you only have 9 or 10 let's say 10 or 11 names,
right?
It's not as I like LA Jews for Peace.
Okay.
I mean, because then they don't know the number.
Right. I just say LA Jews for Peace has members who live in your district.
And then you can say, for example, and you give here, these are one of our, of the members in your district or something.
Yeah. Why do that?
No, use our big name. We don't have to give any names because they don't read it anyhow. It's just stuff.
Yeah. They're just going to send us bullshit back anyway. But
Tony, one hook might be Ted Lieu has been very outspoken about U.S. participation in the bombing of Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could say we want the treatment, you know, the criticism of the U.S. role in the bombing and attacks on Yemen to be expanded to criticism of comparable behavior by Israel and U.S. support for it. I mean, that might be a hook to kind of paint someone like Ted Lieu into a corner, because he is good on Yemen. He's one of the best on Yemen, but he doesn't expand his critique to ever include Israel.
Maybe we could do another thing, also add at the bottom a couple of references to open letters and other things that we did as a group to show them that we active and we do things. So kind of like at the bottom is some references.
Okay.
Can we assume that Israel lobby type people heavily lobby all of these? Absolutely. I know that's,
yes.
Once when I was up at Ted Lieu's office, there were kind of the Israel lobby types who were there at the same time. And I think Karen Bass at one of her press conferences or town meetings said something comparable.
Yeah,
she sure did. Yeah, she did.
What?
She most certainly did. She said to
Rick. I think Rick Chertoff.
No, she said it to Esty Chandler. She said
Chandler.
She actually said, Esty, you know, if you could get enough people, the way I'm bombarded by you know the Jewish community and on the West Side, especially the West Side of wherever she's at. She said, then, you know, you'll get more action out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those who elected Tom Bradley for 5 terms to be the mayor. It's the West Side Jews and their money. She knows the history of this city.
I don't think that the West Side was more liberal then. I don't think there's too many. They're not really, their liberalism has been heavily diluted since Tom Bradley was
mayor. That's what I'm saying. She knows that it's the right wing, it's the Zionist, it's not the liberals.
Yeah.
But you know, certain things have been changed demographically. We can't take whatever happened 30, 40 years ago and say today is exactly the same. Something changed, especially among young generation of Jews. It's not the same.
Right. Mm-hmm. Needs to cater to the Jews with the money on the West Side, otherwise she doesn't get elected. She knows it.
She's probably the leading candidate for mayor. Other people who are running are Michael Feuer, who actually lives in my neighborhood, and he's the city attorney of the city of LA.
You like
but he
it.
Kind of is a lackluster guy who doesn't really, I mean, my sense is he doesn't have a real following. I could be wrong. He's Karen Bass has a following.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and De Leon, who's a former California state senator and is now a member of the city council for East LA or the downtown. He has a following. And
De Leon is in my district. He's my guy.
Yeah, so he represents the inner city neighborhoods then.
Is this the guy that ran against Feinstein?
Yeah, I think he did, and he lost.
Yeah, of course.
So then a lot of these people who are termed out in Sacramento go back to the city council in LA.
Yeah.
I think about half the members of the city council.
You're being too kind when you say that he lost. he got creamed.
When is the election for the mayor?
I think it's next year.
Next year. Yeah.
And half of the members of the city council
also
will be up as well.
It will be a separate month.
I'm sorry?
It will be together with the midterm election?
Yeah, they try to piggyback one election on the other.
So what this is means that Karen Bass, if she losing the mayor election, she not going back to Congress, right?
Right.
I don't know. Sometimes they have to quit if they hold one office to run for a second office. I don't know how that works in this
because
case.
Because it will be November the same
day. Oh, so she can't run for two offices at the same time.
Yeah,
so
she
would be out of Congress.
Election. Yeah, well, I mean, LA's election used to be in the odd year, and that's why what's his name got an extra year on his
Caricetti.
Term. Because they adjusted it to coincide with the even number year.
Yeah, because the turnout was so low, it was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
How many people actually went to vote? So they hope in November, when they have other election, they're gonna vote for the mayor. It makes sense because the turnout is so low. It's I can't even call it election when you have 15% of the people went to vote?
Sometimes even less than that in some council districts.
Yeah, it reminds me of KPFK, where they struggled to get a 12% quorum.
Do you vote, Tony?
But you have to justify the instincts of the voters.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I've been in this city for 50 years. I don't think that any mayor really made the big difference in this city. In the margin, yes. But is a big thing. You think the mayor can do anything in the city? He's got 15 freelancers sitting in the city council and they tell him what to do and he cannot do that. The sheriff doesn't answer to him. The chief of police doesn't answer to him. So what does a mayor can do? He can talk. And a little
bit. He can do a little bit more than that. He hires the director of every city, general manager of every city department, and he nominates the people who are on the commissions. Every city department has a commission that has a pretty powerful role. And he can propose legislation. That's true. He can't, there's a lot of things that he can't do through executive reports.
That's the whole thing.
But I think the real problem in LA is that Garcetti and before him via Ragosa were pretty much were heavily and successfully lobbied by the real estate industry. Mm-hmm. You know, and everything they proposed and the message came down was give these guys what they want.
What's his name? The Republican, I forgot his name in the 90s.
Richard Reardon.
Yeah, he was not a real estate guy, right?
No, he was too, but he was considered to, he was personally very wealthy, so he was able to withstand it. Most people I know who have worked for the city consider him to be one of the better mayors. Like Bradley was considered to be a good mayor, although according to the LA Times, Bradley had a lot of federal corruption investigations. There was a big story in the LA Times about that. Others are just kind of freeloader types like Villaraigosa or glad or just ambitious lightweights like Garcetti.
What's his name? Han. Han wasn't a mayor.
He was a mayor for one term only.
One term, yeah.
Nick, how does Ilhan Omar get elected? She talks outright about the horrible things Israel does. I mean, how the settlement, I mean, they're occupied and what they do to the Palestinians.
Well, because the Twin Cities themselves, it's kind of like Seattle. They're very liberal. So the lady, who's the lady who is McCollum?
Betty McCollum.
Okay. She represents St. Paul, which is on the west east side, right, Judy? The east side of the river is the St. Paul. The west side is Minneapolis, and I think
actually the river takes a thing, so they're both on the east and west side.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think Ilhan Omar represents some of the more liberal DFL areas of Minneapolis.
I think St. Paul's on the west side. I remember when we were little at school, we took a train, and when we took a train east to New York, my family did, but also we took a train from school and it went through Minneapolis. So
okay.
St. Paul must be on the west.
I've been there 100 times, but I better look at the map.
I never looked at it either. I just remember the train. Yeah. But apparently,
but,
I mean,
but downtown St. Louis is east of downtown Minneapolis.
St. Paul.
St. Paul.
Yeah, St. Paul.
St. Paul's my hometown. But I mean, there's a lot of Jews in Minneapolis. So apparently I don't think that whole thing, people could talk out against Israel and nobody would care. I don't think that would get people unelected. Although maybe the lobby would come in, I guess, big time if they, like in Los Angeles. Maybe Schiff couldn't do it. Although he seems safe. Schiff should come out and say something.
Need somebody to push him.
I don't think people like that are ideologically critical of Israel. So
probably
Henry Waxman, who was Ted Lieu's predecessor, was you know, the joke was he you know, like Donald Trump said, I could murder someone on Fifth Avenue and right. Nobody would prosecute me. Henry Waxman must have gotten elected by 80% again and again and again. He just kind of played his, I grew up in Boyle Heights and I grew up in the Fairfax area and I'm kind of a homegrown kid. I mean, that was enough for him, kind of like Zev Yaroslavsky. Mm-hmm. They just kind of were ethnic politicians. And they had a good social issue. Henry Waxman's issue was healthcare. And so I'm sure he was hawkish on Israel, but he got elected by being very strong on healthcare.
Is he dead?
No, Henry Waxman's still alive. He retired. He lives in Washington, D.C. His daughter went to Israel, I know. So that's something. Like, she probably was a student at Brandeis or went to like a junior year abroad in Israel, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Your son-in-law, Pudik, is he still active or is he kind of just given up?
My son-in-law?
Yeah. The guy that's...
My son-in-law and daughter are stuck in Mexico. They went for a couple of days to Cancun and they ran into a buzzsaw at Homeland Security and they refused to accept a photocopy of his document. And they said, wow, you need to have the original document indicating that you are going to get a green card. So they are in an Airbnb in Cancun or some little town by Cancun waiting for DHL to deliver the original document.
That's so nuts.
It's crazy. And I'm sure it was arbitrary because their lawyer is very good and said, you will absolutely have this document accepted. But apparently, every agency has real hard-ass people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a range of political attitudes. This is probably someone who flourished under the Trump administration and is still in a position of power.
Did you have to hire a lawyer?
They have a lawyer.
They have a good
lawyer. But,
I mean, they have a permanent lawyer. I mean, they hired a lawyer for this case, right?
Yeah. She's handled everything. And they got advice from a cousin who's also an immigration lawyer. So they're lawyered up.
But when did this happen, Dick?
Right now. It happened on Sunday. We got an emergency call at 5 in the morning. And they're stuck in, they didn't want to leave Cancun because they said, what are we going to do? Go to Mexico City and just wait in the Airbnb? We'd rather wait in an Airbnb in the Caribbean coast of Mexico. So they're just having an extended vacation. We're taking care of the dog. We're dog sitters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Huh.
Weren't you scared when you got that call, Dick?
Of course. You know, when you get a call at 5 in the morning, you wonder, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay, should we call this quits, guys?
Yes.
Okay.
Glasgow be damned.
Jeff Cooper had his hand up.
Yeah, I'm just saying goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Jeff.
Take care, Tony.
Okay, bye-bye.
Come on.